You ask me why I love her? Well, give me time. I'll explain. You've seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way? Have you watched the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay? Have you heard a Bob White calling in the Carolina pines? Or heard the bellow of a diesel at the Appalachia mines? Does the call of the Niagara thrill you when you hear her waters roar? You look with awe and wonder at her Massachusetts shore, where men who braved a hard new world first stepped on Plymouth Rock. Do you think of them when you stroll along a New York City dock? Have you seen a snowflake drifting in the Rockies way up high? Have you seen the sun come blazing down from a bright Nevada sky? Do you hail to the Columbia as she rushes to the sea, or bow your head at Gettysburg in our struggle to be free? Have you seen the mighty Tetons? You watched an eagle soar? Have you seen the Mississippi roll along Missouri's shore? Have you felt a chill at Michigan when on a winter's day her waters rage along the shore in thunderous display? Does the word aloha make you warm? Do you stare in disbelief when you see the surf come roaring in at Waimea Reef? From Alaska's cold to the Everglades, from the Rio Grande to Maine, my heart cries out, my pulse runs fast, the might of her domain. You ask me why I love her? I've a million reasons why. My beautiful America, beneath God's wide, wide sky.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I love America. And I'm proud to be an American. And I love our heroes. And I love our freedom. But is that okay? Is it all right to love America? And maybe you had the same experience I had every morning before school. And you can say it with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Every morning, we said that. And it used to be that you just kind of believed everybody loved America. Just thought everybody did. And most everybody did, and every politician said they did. Every politician said they loved America. Whatever party they were in, they loved America, and it was just a matter of how they were going to do the best job for America. And we had differences on that, but everybody loved America. But things have really been changing a lot, haven't they? And people are ashamed of statues of American patriots. They're ashamed of founding fathers because of things that they've written in their past. Some parts of the country, even right here in Georgia, you can get in trouble if you decide to fly an American flag outside your house because it doesn't fit with the neighborhood's standards. Things have really changed. Well, we have some professional multimillionaires, richer than you and I will ever be, that will not stand for the national anthem because we're an oppressed nation. Just read about an Olympic athlete this week. Said she never really cared for the national anthem. It never really represented her. And we have a new president, a new administration that's been pushing and rewarding grants to school districts that teach critical race theory. It's called the 1619 Project. And I'm bringing this up because This is something your children will probably be taught. So we should be educated about what it is. The basic idea of this teaching is that our country was flawed, and it's been tainted with racism, and the Constitution is immoral, and the founders of our country were racist, and so everything's been tainted. And the reason that the Pilgrims left England is so that they could have the freedom to own slaves. And the main point of this is that America was not founded on freedom of religion, it was founded on slavery. So we shouldn't go back to 1776, we should go back to 1619, when the first slaves came to our country. Now, it's not so much that you and I are going to be changed by any of this, because we've got our minds made up already, okay? But it is what our children and our grandchildren would be taught. And the idea that we're not living in a free nation, we don't have freedom in our country, that's something that children are going to be taught. And one of the big ideas they're going to be taught, go ahead and switch the screen here, is white privilege. This is the problem. It's all over. I'm not bringing up something new. This is all over the news. From a young age, children will be taught. And by the way, I wanted to pick the right picture. I wanted you to see some white privileged children here. They look pretty privileged, don't they? Anyway, from a young age, children will be taught that white people are the problem. So if you are another race, you can't succeed because of white people. And if you're white, you should be ashamed. You should be ashamed because of your skin color. And if you're non-white, the whites are the source of your oppression. So how can you ever love a country where this kind of stuff is happening? Well, the result is that we start distrusting each other and we start hating each other. So is it all right to love America? Well, we have a flag right here in our church. You do realize that some very educated Christians believe that we shouldn't have the American flag in the church, because what this, if you love your country and you love your flag, then Jesus loves the whole world, and you can't possibly love the whole world and love your country and love the flag. So some people believe you should never have a flag in the sanctuary. What if somebody comes in from another country and they see this American flag here? They're going to feel uncomfortable. So it's unchristian, they say, to have a flag in the sanctuary. Well, these are the kinds of things that we are debating with and we're struggling with in our country right now. So what does the Bible say? Well, if you go ahead and switch it to the next one, when we think about the fact that the church started under the Roman Empire, and this is the insignia of the Roman Empire, the first century world, it was so much different than America. It was a cruel, oppressive nation. It was highly secular. They didn't have a Christian founding fathers. God wasn't in the founding documents of Rome. They never had Make Rome Great Again rallies. They didn't have that. This was an impressive society there, and the emperors demanded that they be worshipped, and they just kind of tried to get all the religions to get along with each other. So a Christian found themselves in a different position. So what if you were a Christian and you were a Roman citizen? Well, the Apostle Paul was one, but you didn't see him mention it in his letters. Did he ever mention it at all, or did he ignore the fact that he was a citizen of Rome? So let's look in the book of Acts today. We're looking in Paul's missionary journey in Acts chapter 21. He arrives in Jerusalem. The Christians greet him and welcome him. And he taught them, and he went to the temple. And as soon as he got to the temple, the Jews got all upset and stirred up when they heard that he was there. And the crowd seized him, and they drug him away, and they tried to kill him. And a commander of the Roman troops saw the rioters beating Paul, so they stopped the beating. They arrested Paul, they put him in chains, and the commander asked the crowd what he had done. And he couldn't get a straight answer. So the violence became so great, Paul said, "Well, let me speak to the crowd." So the commander let him speak. And this is out of Acts 22. And Paul begins sharing his testimony and how he was born a Jew and how he was trained a Pharisee and how God appeared to him and blinded him with a bright light. And Paul had humbled himself and he had been baptized. He becomes a Christian. And the crowd listens to him and seems to calm down until Paul says these words from God. He says, this is what God told him, "Go, I will send you to the Gentiles." Now the Jews did not accept the Gentiles, and they thought he was blaspheming, so they were so infuriated, they threw off their cloaks to try to kill him. And the commander saw what was happening, he saw the riot, and he acted, and they took Paul away. So if you'll switch it again here, Acts chapter, and this should be Acts 22 on this slide, Acts 22, verses 23 through 29, this is where we're going to be today. Acts 22, 23 through 29. As they were shouting and throwing off their cloaks and flinging dust into the air, the commander ordered that Paul be taken into the barracks. He directed that he be flogged and interrogated in order to find out why the people were shouting at him like this. As they stretched him out to flog him, Paul said to the centurion standing there, "Is it legal for you to flog a Roman citizen who hasn't even been found guilty?" When the centurion heard this, he went to the commander and reported it. "What are you going to do?" he asked. "This man's a Roman citizen." The commander went to Paul and asked, "Tell me, you're a Roman citizen?" "Yes, I am," he answered. Then the commander said, "Well, I had to pay a lot of money for my citizenship." "But I was born a citizen," Paul replied. Those who were about to interrogate him withdrew immediately, and the commander himself was alarmed when he realized that he had put Paul, a Roman citizen, in chains. So Paul, a Christian, interesting enough, was rescued by the Roman Empire, by Roman troops. The commander orders that Paul be taken back to the barracks and to be beaten. They want to find out what he was doing, what his problem, what he had been causing. The commander sees his main job is to try to keep the peace between different religious groups. So Paul's rescued from the mob, and now he's going to be interrogated through scourging. They're going to force him to confess to something that he did, some kind of crime that he did wrong. Now we learn from 2 Corinthians 11:24. Paul says that five times he faced Jewish floggings, and he had been beaten with rods on several occasions by the Romans. But none of them had the murderous quality of a scourging. So go ahead and switch it there. Here we have a drawing of a Roman scourge. The Roman scourge was, it had 3 to 9 strands of leather on it. And at the end, it was weighted down with pieces of metal. And those strands were attached to a wooden handle. And a person was beaten repeatedly with this scourge. Now, you can imagine that when that came down on somebody's back, those pieces of metal would rip open a person's back. You know why I love America? One of the reasons I love America is because we don't do this. We don't even do this to illegals. Nobody in this country gets this kind of treatment there. So if a person thinks we're oppressive, they might want to read history a little bit and realize we're really pretty easy in this country. So Paul is stripped to the waist. He's tied to a short post. He's forced to be bent over. His hands are suspended above the ground. His back is exposed. They're about ready to start beating him, and Paul speaks up to the centurion who was supervising, and he asks, "Is it legal for you to flog a Roman citizen who hasn't been found guilty?" The centurion, knowing that he could get that same punishment if he had broken the law, was shocked. So he went to his commander. He says, "What are you going to do? This man is a Roman citizen." So the commander says, "Tell me, are you a Roman citizen?" And Paul didn't seem to look like a Roman citizen. Remember, he'd been beat many times. And so he would have welts and bruises, all these attempts, people trying to kill him. So Paul said, "Yes, I am." And the commander said, "Well, I had to pay a lot of money for my citizenship. The commander's thinking that maybe Paul had somehow paid money to become a citizen, or, just didn't believe that Paul was a citizen. Paul says, I was born a citizen. Now, we learn in Acts chapter 9 that you could become a citizen through buying a citizenship if you were born in a Roman colony, or you could receive citizenship as a reward for military service. Or, and this is probably the reason for Paul, if a descendant of yours was a citizen of Rome, you could automatically become a Roman citizen. However it was, Paul was a citizen, and he wasn't afraid to say so. And let me just pause for a second to say, we're having a big debate in our country right now about citizenship. It's very important to have citizenship, because if you don't have citizens, you don't have a nation. So, like America, being a citizen of the Roman Empire gave a person rights. So Paul reveals he's a citizen, and they stopped the scourging. You're not allowed to do that to an unconvicted Roman citizen. And the commander was alarmed. So the next day, they let Paul go. So where does Paul go? He goes back to speak to the religious leaders. He was a very courageous man. He appeared before them, and he starts sharing his testimony again. And a dispute breaks out while he's speaking about the resurrection. And they tried to kill him again. So the commander takes Paul back to the barracks for his own safety. But notice this. It is his citizenship that saves him, that gives him further opportunities to preach. Romans 13:1, Paul writes, God established governments. Verse 4, they exist to do good, and they exist to punish evil. Now, if God has established a government, why shouldn't a Christian use their citizenship to advance the cause of Christ? If Paul does this, and he's going to end up speaking to high government officials, why shouldn't we? Now, let me be clear. God loves America. It's true. He does. He established America. But that doesn't mean he loves us more than other countries, other nations. You know, if you are a Christian in another country, you would want God to bless your nation too. I heard one preacher say it this way, I believe that God loves my family. He said, but that doesn't mean he doesn't love other families. I believe God protects my family, but that doesn't mean God doesn't protect other families. God has blessed America so richly, why wouldn't we want to use our wealth and our freedom to tell others about him? So Paul finds himself back in prison. He's locked up, but he's not forgotten by the Lord. Look at Acts 23. This is just one page over, verse 11. The following night, the Lord stood near Paul and said, take courage. As you've testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify in Rome. So what happened to Paul? Serves as an encouragement to us. If you're a Christian and you love your country, I see some encouragement here that we can take from our passage. The first way we can be encouraged, go ahead and advance it to the next screen. Here we go. First way to be encouraged is to remember that God is standing by your side. God called Paul on the road to Damascus to be his witness. And there were times like this when he felt alone. He didn't have a companion. Paul didn't have a friend with him. Now, we can all think of times when we felt alone, when we felt that nobody knew what we were going through, nobody cared what we were going through. But Jesus promised us he would never leave us. Remember, it's during these low times when Jesus is standing by you. That night in prison, Paul became aware Jesus was standing by him. And I believe today that when we seek God in prayer, he's going to have a way of letting us know that he's there. We're never alone. Jesus won't ever forget us. Second way to be encouraged, number two, is to remember that God calls you to be courageous. On this lonely, discouraging night, the Lord tells Paul, take courage. This is what Paul needed to hear. He was just a man, just like us, struggling with doubts. And there was nothing at this time in his life that he had to be optimistic about. He didn't have Silas with him. Remember in the book of Acts, another place, Paul's in prison, but he's with Silas. And they're singing. And they're joyful. On this night, he doesn't have anybody with him. Paul's by himself. I'm sure it was hard for him to find anything to even sing about. He'd been attacked. He'd been almost murdered. He'd been almost flogged by the Roman military. Now he's back in prison. And now it looks like his whole mission has been stopped. But it was during this time of prayer, Paul must have been praying, that God answers him. And it's during these times in our life, when it doesn't seem like much is happening, maybe our troubles are piling up in our life. We feel like nobody understands. But we have to gather strength. We have to gather courage. It can't be based on things happening in our life. You can't base your courage on your family or your finances or your health, because those things are going to change rapidly. But God is in control. We may feel powerless, but we can find courage from the Lord. I like Ephesians 6:10. It says, "Be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might." We can find strength and courage in His power, not our own. Now the third way to be encouraged is to know that God has a plan for you to be His witness. Acts 23:11, the Lord tells Paul, "As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must testify in Rome." Paul's going to use his Roman citizenship to carry his message to Rome, the capital of the Gentile world. God's telling Paul, this isn't the end. Your stop in prison, it's just temporary. He says, "I'm sending you to Rome." Now, Paul would have many days of inactivity. Maybe you felt this way. Have you ever felt like your life is just wasting? Like you're just going through the motions and nothing is really happening here? Well, Paul would have many days of inactivity. Many days when he was going to be in prison. But God would open up the doors of Rome using his citizenship. One of the main purposes of a Christian is to be a witness to Jesus. That's how the church started. That's how the church continues today. Christians can't help but tell people around them how Jesus changed their life. He's the hope of the world. It starts right here in Girard. It starts with our families. It goes to the capital of the United States of America, and it goes across the world. We are to be a witness across the world. I want you to think about this. Think about the golden opportunity we have right here in America. Because we're citizens of our country. We have freedom to share our faith. Now, we don't put our hope in a political cause. If we put our hope in a political cause, we're going to be disappointed. We can't put our hope in a party, because those things are going to fail. But we put our hope in Jesus Christ. Now, don't get me wrong. We do have to speak up when our religious freedom is being attacked. And it's under attack right now. We can't let the government tell us when life begins. We can't let the government tell us what genders there are. We can't let the government tell us what marriage is. We can't let the government tell us when we can gather for worship or what we're allowed to say. There's many, many things we can't let the government tell us, but we have the freedom to speak up. We must tell America about Jesus. Paul used his citizenship to do so. Can't we use ours? Are we supposed to act like we're not Americans? Are we supposed to act like we weren't born here? Are we supposed to act like we don't have Christian founders? Why not use the symbols of the nation? Why not use the American flag? Christians were involved in the founding of this country. Why not use those things to be a witness for Jesus? But Jesus is bigger than America. If you took Jesus out of America and you took his purpose for us and Christian heritage, if you took all that away, America is no different and no more exceptional than any other nation. So I want you to imagine, if you will, that you were raised in a very wealthy home. Just imagine this. And you were given, because your parents and who they were, they gave you many good privileges. And they took good care of you. They provided for your needs, and they treated you well. Now, they weren't perfect. They had their faults, but they treated you very well. And so when you graduated from high school, you decided, I want to work. I just want to stay home and have mom and dad pay for everything. And so you're still living at home, and they're still treating you well, and they're even giving you a monthly allowance because you're a good son or daughter. And so everything's going well, but as you're sitting at home, you start thinking about the fact that, you know, when you were growing up, your parents had some flaws. You had some things in your parents' past that wasn't too great. In fact, they owe you even more of a monthly allowance. And then you start figuring out, I can run around and travel the country, or I can be on social media and I can start earning money talking about how bad my parents were. So you start writing blogs and making appearances and telling everyone. And the more you tell, the bigger the exaggeration gets. Because you're really, their parents weren't that bad. But the more exaggerations you use, the better you get paid and the more opportunities you have. And sometimes you have to go all the way back to 200 years ago to really find some good things to share about how bad your parents and your family were. But at the end of the day, after you do all your travels, you go back home to mom and dad, and you live under their roof, and they pay for everything. That doesn't sound too fair, does it? Well, that's what's been happening in America. People are living in a free nation, and that freedom has been made possible through past sacrifices, even bloodshed. We're living in a nation with great benefits, great safety and security, and yet so many people are just running America down for their past mistakes here, while they continue to enjoy the blessings of this country. What blessings we have here. Freedom to worship. But Christians, our Bibles are collecting dust. Sometimes we're not putting a priority on worshiping every Sunday. What's wrong with loving a nation where we've been given so much freedom and so many opportunities? Nothing at all. I'm grateful to be living in this country. Now, don't get me wrong. America has her faults. You know, you can still love America and still be aware of her faults. What I love about America is that she has worked to correct many of her sins. Now, one of the most terrible sins in America was the sin of slavery, the enslavement of people based on the color of their skin. And what critical race theory doesn't tell you, and I want to quote from an African-American woman named Dr. Carol Swain. She is a history scholar, and she's black. And this is what she says. She says the reason slavery ended was because many white people, many of them Christians, stood up against and opposed slavery. So Christians, black and white, prayed together for the end of slavery. I mean, it was one of the reasons that thousands of people lost their lives in the Civil War. Eventually, it was ended, but this is the key. It could never have happened without the white people standing up against it. The greatness of America, this is Dr. Carol Swain, is shown in blacks and whites working together. She's going to be a preacher one day. Anyway, blacks and whites working together. And it was the blacks and whites working together in the South that set up historically black colleges. America's great because all races matter. Because all races work together. In fact, it's ironic that one of the greatest people that we all know of him, even though we may not know his name, made a big difference in America and still continues to is a man named John Newton. John Newton owned slaves and sold slaves. He was very rebellious as a young man. He was a sailor. And he became a Christian. And God was working on his life. He was still selling slaves. And God was working on his life. And the more he thought and prayed and read the Bible, the more he realized that slavery was so wrong and so evil. He ended up stopping his travels. And he ended up becoming an Anglican priest. And he wrote some 280 different hymns. And he wrote this pamphlet against slavery that was really, really powerful. This is a white man now. And it made a great impact. But you know, we still feel his impact today, right here in America, because he wrote a song. He wrote a song, 1772. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Do you realize that most popular song in America was written by a man that used to own slaves? And it's so popular here in America, he made an impact. But that song tells us what the Christian life is all about. We were lost in sin. God in His great love, Jesus in His great love, went to the cross for us. And He loved us. And He saved us by His grace. So we're going to have our song of invitation. So we invite you today, if you need to make a decision for Jesus. The Bible says that we believe and we turn from our sin, we confess Him, and we're baptized. Let's all stand as we sing our song, Amazing Grace.